For all practical purposes, man is an inverted plant with his root in heaven and his body on the earth. But all of these different directions of energy all work together to produce what will ultimately be the perfect development of the human being. We will have the individual in whom all these energy flows are reconciled and become therefore the basis of the four types of life that we have within human consciousness. All the way along, as these energy fields work, we read in the paper of a devastating earthquake, and we also read in the fact that there has been another wave of anarchy somewhere on the earth. We have had war and we have had tragedy from the very beginning. And very careful statistics have shown that war is simply a disease of the sort of a hysteria of the emotional nature. It is a misuse of the etheric energies by a conscious misdirection of their purpose and work. The energy that is supposed to give us life, make us more useful to each other, is self-centered. And self-centered energy is wrong to start with. So we have all this primer problem to try to work out. But we must realize that the stagnation that we are in, where actually our transportation is bogged down, all of our institutions are suffering from lack of ethical maturity. We have to realize at this point that it is necessary to do something to change the basic state of things. It's not going to be enough to redo the curriculum. It's not going to be sufficient to open a new church. It is necessary for us to realize that the energy fields of the earth are honest, and that only the honest use of them can prevent misery. The more we use natural resources for selfish purposes, the sicker the planet is going to get. And the sicker it gets, the more we're going to cry out against heaven for being unkind to us. Actually, we are not here on a matter of kindness or unkindness. We are in this world to learn. We are here to learn how to become in due time the sources of new worlds in space. Evolution says that we've got to grow up. And if we don't grow up, we can never take our place with the constellations which fill the heavenly worlds. We have to grow. We have to learn the lesson. And the more we rebel against it, the more the lesson hurts us. The more we suffer from our own mistakes, the more certainly we are punished for our own ignorance. Now, there's no real reason why the 20th century, coming as it is coming gradually to an end, should try to hide behind the shield of ignorance. We are not that ignorant. We are really perverse for a reason and a purpose. We do not wish to become honest until something makes us choose this as the only possible way out. The problem we have to get rid of will be self-interest, and the self-interest centered upon self-destruction. We seem to feel, and do feel, that what we want to do, we must do. But the time will come when we will also discover that these things that we feel that we must do, that are not right, we must not do, because they are destroying us. We're going to have to recognize that we either have to be good children or we're not going to be here. And nature has wiped out many civilizations before this one. The real purpose of all growth is to unfold and enlighten inner living, to become more and more suitable for the divine destiny for which we were intended. It's interesting to imagine the problem of a small planet where we have just one little ball floating in space, and all the responsibilities that we have, and all the great projects that we undertake, and all the great wars we insist on fighting, all on this little molehill in space. Something that is hardly possible to find with a middle-range telescope is the source of the entire existence that we know of. On this little ball, we are living and dying and having our being, We are building our empires. We are going through all the wonders of a small boy in a sandbox. We are going through all these things without the realization that we have nothing to start with. If we took the values that are on Earth at the present time and divided them evenly between the population of the Earth, we'd all come out with just a few dollars. We have nothing to understand this with. We do not recognize that we are wayfarers on a little ship on a great ocean. That there is no problem as to how great we can be. The question is, how can we make the journey on this ship a lovely journey? How can we spend our time growing and being friendly and being kind as we swing through space at thousands of miles a minute? All of the great empires, all of the great monopolies, all of the great combines that we fashion in economically are ridiculous things. They're like children in a dollhouse. The facts of the matter will always remain that all these ambitions come to the same end, and yet we never seem to grow. Now, why is it that we keep on making the same mistake? Why do we take the energy that we were given to grow with and use it to destroy each other? Why should we miss the gorgeous opportunities that we have of enriching the inner life of the individual? Entities are brought into embodiment on a planet in order to grow. They're here in order to be better, to improve, to make new unusual spiritual relationships. They're here to grow. They're here to find a garden and leave it a garden. They are not here to find a garden and leave it a desert. This little planet is so inconsequential that even if an individual could rule it, he wouldn't be ruling anything. He would only have a lot of trouble and be few of days. We can't. There's nothing to it. And we just can't realize that nature itself has said, "Thou shalt not be ambitious." Nature says this. And yet if you say that today in the business world, you'll be subject to ridicule and persecution. Of course you have to be ambitious. You have to do the things that will help to advance this great cause of ours, the industry that we have built up, largely to impoverish our natural resources. No one is thinking about what we owe nature. We're all trying to claim what nature owes us. And what it really owes us at the present time is a good spanking. And if we try hard enough, we will ultimately get it. So here we have the smog. The smog of our discontent. The smog of our debilitated resources. The burning up of our timbers, the exhaustion of our coal, the blazing away with our petroleum resources, everything going to waste at full speed, probably on the assumption that it'll last long enough for us to get out and then let it all fall on our descendants. Our descendants, on the other hand, will probably have their own problems. They don't need ours. What we have to face now is education. We've got to clear the air. We've got to find clear air to breathe, which means we've got to have clear thoughts to think with, that we have to have honest emotions to feel with, and we have to have simple and honest labors to work with. All of the overtones, all the drama, all the great fortunes and so forth are futilities. They are nothing but a group of tiny little creatures believing they're big on a moderately small planet somewhere on the edge of infinity. There is nothing to it. And there's no reason we shouldn't be happy, because the happiness is just as big on a small planet. We are perfectly capable of a very harmonious, useful, pleasant way of life. Nature has intended it to be that way. But when a few individuals get grandiose complexes about things, then everything gets into trouble. So we're now gathering up a kind of malaise that we never had before. We're going to psychiatrists to find out what's the matter with us. We're discouraged, we're tired, we're worn out, we're disillusioned. We fear the future, we don't trust our representatives, we don't trust ourselves. And we know that our neighbors are out for what we have. So we have absolutely a life that is nothing but a mass of negative, subjective anxieties, which we can call psychic smog. It's that we are not able to live in a daily happiness consistent with good health and the pleasantries of daily existence. We have created for ourselves a worry that takes up in the morning and stays with us till we go to sleep, and because we can't sleep, we have to take sleeping pills. All of these things over something that has no substance, no reality. Nature did not intend us to compete. Nature does not demand competition. The idea that it does so demand is purely an interpretation by the individual of phenomena that he does not understand. We are all here to be one more or less contented group living within the means of our creation. The planet is not going to get any bigger. The problems are not going to get any smaller unless we make them smaller. And when we can really go to bed and have a night's sleep without fear and without worry, and wake up with a clear head to do the things we really want to do, the smog will begin to clear. It is absolutely impossible to go on with the excesses that are now bothering us. Transportation has become so difficult in many parts of the world that it is practically not possible to get anywhere anymore. A man in the Ukraine, well, not long ago, is said to have wanted to get a new tire for his car. So to get it, he had to go to a town about 60 miles away. So he told the station master to give him a ticket to this town. And the station master handed him a ticket for 30 miles. Well, he said, that's 60 miles to get to that town to get my tire. The station master said, yes. But the line is already 30 miles long, and you have to get at the end of it. And that is not as much of an exaggeration as it sounds. Everything we are doing is simply blocked. In a few years, at the present rate of time, we will not be able to drive a car. We are in the same way in our entertainment field. It is ceasing to entertain. There's barely time enough on the air now between advertisements for a few flashes of some kind of a picture. We are completely bogged down. And the only way we can get out of it, first of all, is personally. We get out of it personally by simply not cooperating in any case where we can get away from cooperating. We can not do many of the things that cause this problem. We can be more articulate in demanding what we want. We can be more specific in failing to cooperate or no longer being willing to cooperate with things we don't believe. We can gradually make major changes within ourselves, and our own smog will begin to clear. We won't worry so much about life if we are not contributing to the worry. And if we get to live a little better ourselves and a little cleaner and a little neater, why, things will improve. Now, several civilizations of the past have made the effort to try this, and so have several great philosophical systems. The effort has been to simplify life. I think probably one of the best efforts was made in this direction was made by Buddhism. It was one of the religions of the world which did not emphasize the importance of success. It made it most important for the individual to see the reality of life in the simple things of daily living. It was the purpose of Buddhism that the individual should gradually relax away from the artificial attachments with which he has become so familiar. The hindrances, as Buddhism calls them, the hindrances of ambition, the hindrances of fear, all these things by means of which we attach ourselves to the burdens of a material existence we have ruined ourselves. There are other faiths and other beliefs that we can use also, but the main purpose is to simplify our own personal beliefs and our own way of life, so that we do not contribute to these difficult problems that have made such a mess out of our world history for so long. I think then we should definitely get together and say we're going to do something about pollution. Pollution is corruption. Pollution is ruining something. It is taking something that may be in itself decent and right and making it indecent and unright. It is doing things to use various capacities and abilities to advance corruptions. Now, take the human mind, for example. We have a mind to think with. Is the computer going to help this any? They will gradually end up without even bothering to think. And yet, when we get that far, we're not going to be many better people. We're not going to have anything but the tail. We're not going to be so wonderful. We'll just wait a few more years for somebody else to over-invent that. Something else will come. So we give our lives to learning to computerize, and what happens to this life within us? What happens to the mind and the heart and the soul? What happens to all the things that we were supposed to do? What happens to the little child that comes into the life of this world, a radiant little object of hope, to be gradually transformed into a wretch of desires and miseries? What are we doing? Why are we not using our world to make something out of it that we can be proud of? It's there. We have everything we need to do great and beautiful things. Down through the pages of history, we see some magnificent souls, great geniuses, great idealists, great servants of humanity, great teachers. Where are they in the textbooks? They're not there. We're not educating people to live better. We're educating people simply to use the mechanisms of a completely materialistic psychology of life. Therefore, we are sick, and we will be sick. Now, it may be that some of us have reached an age where we can't quite go back to school again and learn it over, but we can start where we are now and begin to study into some of these values. There are great ways of advancing knowledge. There are ways of becoming better than we were before. It's something that we can work with every single day. Everyone should have some self-expression. I think the old idea of the guilds was very good. In the days of the princes and the paupers, the guilds were the workmen's organizations that did the hard labor of Europe and built the empires which are now represented by the great palaces and cathedrals. The guildsmen always said you had to have two strings on your bow, and that if you are by some chance a cardinal of the church, you must also be a tradesman. So, if you like to, you can be a cardinal and you can also be a horseshoer. You can make the shoes for horses and put them on if necessary. Or you can become a great scientist of that time, physicist or something of that kind. And as your sideline, you are a baker, making hot cross rolls for the customers. You are supposed to do two things, because you must have variety in life. And the individual with his nose tied into one thing is a danger to himself and everybody else. We have to have variety. And our present way of life penalizes variety. It tells us we must stay with the one job until we are too old to do it. If by chance we get so rich we don't have to do it, we still haven't learned the second trade and have nothing to do but waste what we do have. There are rules that can be taken out. There's some wonderful rules out of the past for teaching people to think now and to think straight and to get rid of all these pressures and miseries that are afflicting so many of them. We are all under the ban of this pressure. So we watch. We are watching the weather right now. We have told how unseasonal it is, how the crops of the Middle West are being devastated by drought. And on the other side of the world, bombings, explosions, fighting. Everywhere arguing and struggling, and everywhere a deep psychic disharmony. We call it smog if we can. A great fear, a great anxiety is resting upon the face of mankind. We are fearing the worst, not because some angry deity is going to do it to us, but because we haven't sense enough not to hurt each other. The time has come when these things have to be changed, because if this smog continues in our own soul, we will find the atmosphere of the earth may be so polluted that humanity can no longer function here. Because fear and anxiety are a form of pollution. They will destroy the life of a human being if they don't give into it too deeply. And they can destroy the life of a planet. This planet is really a lovely thing. It is a gorgeous little bubble floating in space. One of the most magnificent mysteries that we ever attempted to solve, and we're probably not going to solve it right away. But it is a solvable mystery. And we are always adventuring into the wonders of this world. Here's a chance to grow in calm harmony with nature. Why not grow with it instead of against it? Why not bring to the study of life a living interest? Why change it all into a laboratory experience? Why be so constantly concerned with cells and atoms and so forth and forget the wonders of a world of realities about which we know literally nothing? All that world that is behind the veil of ideals is unknown to most people. We live only in the commonplace, and yet the commonplace is only the shell of a magnificent mystery. It's time now to begin to think about some of these things, to get our minds above the smog level. They say if you get up 6,000-7,000 feet, you can get away from the worst smog. If we can get our minds up 6 or 7 inches, we might become happier and more healthy people. We've got to get above the problem. And to get above the problem, we've got to live above it and think above it. We cannot brush the smog away with a machine. We have to change our way of life until we are harmless. And when we are a harmless creation, we will never have these problems to worry about. We will no longer have the problems of our abuse of animals, our abuse of human beings. We will never be sacrificing dreams and hopes and aspirations for a few cents profit. These things belong to a way of life that was primitive, aboriginal, savage. And it goes on and on. War is a savagery which have long gone, have been overcome. There's no reason for these things. There's no need for them. There's just the fact that the individual doesn't try to use the powers with which he has been endowed. I think one of the most fortunate things we notice now is more and more people are turning in search of value, searching for something beyond what they have known before. Something will answer some of their questions. But here again is a problem, because most of these people are not prepared to know an answer when they see it. They're not able or are still unable to select those things which are real from the various opportunities that are being expressed at the moment. Many of the most noble and beautiful of these opportunities are still uncertain, and we haven't the personal value and the personal knowledge to solve them. How a great human family can have come down through the ages to the 20th century and not be able to discern integrity, not be able to measure or face honesty, and not to know what truth is when they see it. These things must be corrected. There's no need for them to go on like this forever. They can't go on forever. Unless we do something about it, we're all going to be the loser. We hope desperately and definitely that the new century is going to bring us a lot of answers. I think it will. There is a new way of life coming. The gradual revolt against stupidity is taking momentum. Now, one thing we have to realize is that when these changes come, there may be a few discomfitures. The individual who has been living entirely in false patterns will probably be disconcerted for a time. But we must also learn to face change as the most important thing in the world. We must learn new things. We must learn to transcend our old beliefs and our old concepts and find better ways of approaching the serious problems of life. We need better families, better education for children, a better understanding to the growing young person going out into life. We need more young people who go out with dedications instead of simply desperate efforts to get rich. We don't need a lot of this flamboyant so-called superficiality with which we try to cover the miseries that we have. Beneath all this grandeur that we now have is an eternal abiding misery, because we have built it upon a plague-ridden foundation. When we get it down right to where it belongs, when we get solid ground under our feet, we can build wonderful worlds, worlds of beauty and truth and hope. We can be friends. We can know that our families are safe, that our children can go out without danger. For all these dangers and all these problems have come from individuals, one way or another, who have never recognized the natural purpose of life. The real reality, which has to finally take over, has not been properly taught or experienced. There is no reason in the world why a people as far advanced as humanity is today cannot solve its problems. It does not solve them because it doesn't know that they are problems. They assume it's just an inevitable fact that we'd be miserable forever. This is not an inevitable fact. This is an inevitable result of a very grave misunderstanding of values. We can clear the atmosphere, clean up our own lives, and build very wonderful new foundations quite easily if we really give it a little thought. One of the things we probably shall have to give a little more intent thought to is also the very simple but very inevitable and very transcendent meaning of love. With all things where there is sincerity, there is growth. Where sincerity is hazarded, the greatest of all dangers comes to us. False affections, false emotions have sustained most of the miseries of history. But when unselfishly, kindly, and gently we love one another, we really honestly want to see each other succeed and grow and become better. If we would have a real warm spot in our heart for that which is true, and a great delight in those things which are simple, ordinary, commonplace, but in a way the greatest artistry of all, if we can begin to build some depth into our civilizations, we will be much happier. And we can get rid of this air smog, because smog is another name for greed. It's another name for personal ambition. It's a name for corruption and dissipation. It is whatever is against a clean world and a good humanity. And the time has come when we are beginning to have to divide the sheep from the goats. There is a situation coming in which individuals will either have to improve or face hardships and pains and sufferings which they did not need to face at all. It is now time to get to work and clear the air. They're going to have to pass some rules on smog, there's no doubt about that, but everyone will find some way of avoiding or evading the rules. But when we finally come to the point where there is no more any way of evading, the smog in our own hearts will clear. The uncertainties which we have allowed to accumulate will gradually fade away. And the antagonisms we have built on the basis of ambitions and competition will have no longer any meaning. Then we will be what we were in the first place and always will be, when it comes right down to the facts of things, very likable human beings who are getting each other and themselves into a lot of trouble over nothing. We're allowing things to happen that should never have happened simply because we didn't realize the importance of a constructively planned life. But these things are coming home to us as never before, and I think they will continue. And by the end of the present century, I think we'll be much further on than we are at the present time. We notice at several places where these changes are beginning. We notice that the great power, the great tremendous driving promise of materialism has become a definite failure. We are finding religion sneaking back into practically every political system of the world, because there's no way of having good people without good ideals. A mechanistic civilization can never be great or permanent, because everywhere we look, we see an infinite misery and mystery, a tremendous grasp of spaces which no materialist can really understand. We have tried materialism as a means of solving the mysteries of superstition, and we've resulted with a materialistic superstition that is the most dangerous of all. We need religion, we need truth, and we need love, and we need friendship, and we need kindness. And with these, the air is clear. With these also, we have economy of living. We will no longer be in a position where we are constantly jealous of somebody else's possessions. All these things are not worthy of human beings, but we have tolerated them too long. And for that matter, here is this little ball going through the air at a tremendous rate of speed. A little world of itself. We hope it will last a while yet, probably will. But here we are out here, sort of half shipwrecked. And for a few years we live here. And we make all this mess out of it. Why not just simply face it as it is? A pleasant trip with a good deal of friendship, a little hard work, a great deal of hope, and a love of study and improvement, and a simple acceptance that it is all part of a divine plan. And when we realize that, we can settle down and be human beings again, instead of all these transcendent giants which are nothing but midgets in disguise. When we get this thought a little bit better fixed, I think the smog will clear, not only on the outside, but the inside. Get rid of it in ourselves, and you'll find the air on the outside will get much more worthwhile to breathe. And we won't all have to go around studying and stammering with headaches and heartaches as we have been in recent years. So if when it comes to smog, let the clearing of smog begin with us. And if we do that, we'll all get along better. Yep, that's it.